Hello and welcome to 35 Minute Movies, a Vin Diesel podcast. This is the podcast where we're talking about all things Vin Diesel. We're going through his entire filmography, ranking and reviewing, and just loving all things Vin Diesel. I'm Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by Vin Diesel's number one fan, Oase. How is it going today?
It's going good, man. How are you? I'm excited to talk about these films. I say this every week, but every week we just get interesting films to talk about.
Yeah, there was a point where I was thinking, oh God, we're gonna just get some. Towards the end of his career, because he's now known for sort of dumb action movies. I thought we're gonna go like, oh, this is tiring now. Come on, just set me free. But no, I'm enjoying looking. Like, the progression is really interesting. I think the progression we've seen from the beginning to end has been really, really cool. We're starting off today with Furious 7, directed by James Wan. We're starting off with Furious 7, directed by James Wan from 2015. It's a very significant film in the Fast franchise. What happens in the movie?
Yeah, so it sort of picks up after the events of Fast and Furious 6. Dominic and his crew, they're now free. And they're sort of, you know, Brian's dad, Dom's got his sort of old house back. They're just sort of settling down when Owen Shaw, Deckard Shaw, the big bad brother of Owen Shaw from Fast 6, is basically on their tail because obviously, they fucked them up at the end of the last one. So basically they want revenge. He wants revenge and he goes after them. They get wrapped up into some spy plot where they're after some hacking device called God's Eye. And so then it's them sort of going after this device, Shaw going after them, other people going after the device. All in all, just a typical Fast and Furious film.
That was the thing that got me the most. It was the spy plot. I just failed to understand the significance of what was happening with
it's
that.
It's stupid. Yeah.
Kurt Russell shows up. Of all people, Kurt Russell's like, hey, it's me, Kurt Russell, saying, I need you to come and do some spy stuff because you're in a game of like shadows and ghosts and stuff. And I'm like,
that was a great Kurt Russell impression, by the way.
I wasn't even trying to do a Kurt Russell impression, but if it was a great Kurt Russell impression, I'll take it. I watched this film while I was editing last week's podcast. And I was like, I've seen it before, so I can just sort of like half concentrate. I can do two things at once. And I found myself quite often stopping what I was doing and looking up from the screen and watching the movie, like just for long, long periods of time.
Yeah.
Because it's better than I remember, which is something. It's been high up on my Fast rankings for a while, but I've never ever thought of it as like one that's up there. But this, it was really good. It's like a great fun time. It's a good watch if you're needing something to like take your mind off.
if you haven't seen it already, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I'm the same. We talked about this with Guardians last week and we said it's one of those films that it's great when you watch it, the sort of more time that passes since you've seen it, you sort of forget. And Furious 7 was always the same for me. It's like when I sort of have that period of time where I'm not watching Furious 7, when I think of it, I'm like, yeah, it's good. But then when I sat down and watched it, like a week or so, a couple of weeks ago, I thought it was great. It was like so much better than I remember. And I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it's because I'm more invested in the franchise now, you know, sort of doing this podcast and with the ninth one coming up. And I think with the ninth one, sort of reminiscing more on sort of, you know, Paul Walker and Brian O'Connor. But it's also just, like aside from the spy stuff is stupid. You've got, I don't know how to pronounce his name,
Digimon Hoff. I don't know. I don't even know his second. I don't actually know his second name, but I know you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's in this. And his sort of whole involvement in the plot is like completely unnecessary. the spy stuff is generally just boring. But then you've got the great sort of family core of this, which I think is, I mean, some of the best sort of family stuff. And then Deckard Shaw's, Jason Statham's just, we've talked about this before, Jason Statham's great in this franchise. It's just, yeah, it's a lot of ingredients that come together to make a very sort of good whole, I think.
I think they must have had to add the spy stuff, because if they'd stripped that away, it would have just been pretty similar to Fast Five, wouldn't it? Because of the like on the run sort of situation, which is, yeah, I can see why they sort of stripped that away in the end. I agree. It just completely loses itself. Like, it gets itself so bogged down in all that stuff that it just becomes, it's stupid. What about? We should really touch on, because I don't want to forget, obviously they lost Paul Walker. I don't know how many months were left of production, but it was about 7 months out from the release date that they had originally, which was like July 2014. This ended up coming out in April 2000, or beginning of 2015 at some point, I believe. They had to obviously do a lot of work to try and implement him to the film and give him a good send-off. How do you feel about his implementation in the film? Because I thought there was some sketchy bits where they had to just sort of do what they could with the stuntmen, and they use his brothers sometime to stand in and do the voice and stuff. I don't know. How do you feel about the implementation in this?
I think they've done a really good job of it. I was saying to you earlier, I think they've, like, you know, I've seen some videos on YouTube from like the Corridor Crew when they'd sort of do reacting to sort of good and bad CGI, and they were talking about sequences in the film that are CG, like it's a CG Paul Walker that I didn't even know was like a CG Paul Walker.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking for it, it can be a bit noticeable in some scenes. Like when you know what scenes to look for it in, you can notice it, obviously.
The funeral scene, I think, is the one that stands out for me the most, where they're standing at the funeral, and it's very, very obvious, because it's the way his head sort of moves on his body. It's almost like shimmering. That was kind of disappointing, but apart from that, it's pretty solid, isn't it?
But the thing is, I've heard that it's the most sort of difficult thing to CG is a face, because of all the sort of movements that go in your face, you know, your eyes, your sort of mouth, all the lighting, the motion of it. I've heard it's like the hardest thing to sort of CG. The fact that they did such a good job, I think obviously the ending scene is notoriously like that CG. I think that's purposeful, though. I think it's because I think it adds to the send off. You know, I think that sort of CG in that last scene when sort of Vin looks over at him in the car, I think it sort of adds to the send off. I don't know whether it's purposeful or not.
I never thought that was too bad in terms of the CGI, the one in the car. I think the stuff on the beach maybe is a bit more questionable in terms of how it looks, but I always thought the stuff in the car where he looks back and he's like, "Hey, you're gonna say leave us saying goodbye." Is I found myself getting a little bit more emotional this time. Yeah. I don't know what it was.
I don't know
if it was because we've watched them all sort of back to back, and we're obviously doing all this Vin Diesel stuff. And we read a lot about Vin Diesel and how much Paul meant to Vin.
Yeah.
That it was sort of a bit harder to watch, I guess, and see all that stuff, and it's a shame, because he was such a good leading man as well. Do you know what I mean? Paul Walker was one of the, like, a really great leading man in these films. I think I've only ever seen him in Fast and Furious. I think that's all I've ever seen him in. But it has made me want to go and watch some of his other films. The ending scene was like, oh, this is, I'm actually tearing up
I'm
a little
the same,
bit here. This
yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
I think it was actually on this podcast where we were talking about how, I think it was when we were discussing the first Fast and Furious, about how it's actually Brian who's the sort of main character and Dom's the sort of supporting character, whereas the perception on the franchise, I think nowadays, is that it's Dom's franchise and you know, Brian was always the supporting. But like, I think sort of realizing that this time, it definitely made me, it made it really sort of hit hard. I think it's just such a great, well done send off. Like as far as like I know you. I know you were talking about this in terms of like it doesn't fit with his character necessarily. It's not something he would do.
Yeah, no, especially with the whole like thing at the beginning of the film where he was like, I can't just leave him. Like, it's a very whiplash. And I totally get it. And there's not a lot they could have done about it, but it's a very, in terms of like watching a film as like watching the film as a whole and just taking that out of it, it's a weird whiplash for him to go from, I need to help my family, I need to protect, I need to help Dom and all that, and I can't just leave him because they've obviously, like, this guy blew up my house and all that. And I suppose he was going to semi-leave, like, wasn't going to get much involved because he was doing the van stuff, like, becoming a dad. But if push comes to shove, he would have always jumped out and helped. He would have, no doubt in my mind, he would have come and helped for Fast and Furious 8. And then whatever happens in Fast 9, it's just, you know, I mean, it's one of those ones where it's like, I can respect it, but it does seem like a bit of whiplash in terms of where he was at the beginning of the movie and where he is now.
Here's an interesting point there. I'm so curious to know how they're going to address it in Fast 9 because Mia's coming back.
Yeah.
So because Mia's involved, I'm so, and we know that Brian's alive in this world. That's something that Justin Lin wanted to sort of make known and wanted to preserve. And so I'm curious to know how they're going to address that.
And, a quick and cut it, to Paul Walker in a kitchen with an apron on, cooking some eggs for his kids in a high chair, I think is exactly what needs to happen.
Yeah, possibly. I could see that. I know what you mean. But I think it's the best thing they could have done, sort of giving the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Because I think killing off is never the answer.
No.
You know, I'm trying to think of examples where they've sort of done it. But I feel like there's definitely better solutions to it.
I mean, killing off Carrie Fisher, just for the sake
of... Yeah, that's the one that sort of came to mind.
There's a long list of things wrong with The Rise of Skywalker, and that is definitely one of them, because her death just was...
It just doesn't do justice.
It's not meaningful whatsoever. There's no reason for it, and it feels so off. And that's one of the worrying things about having... killing off your character when they have died in real life is it just becomes sort of like, well, we have to get rid of him somehow. And that's why I'm really curious also about what's going to happen to T'Challa in Black Panther 2 after Chadwick Boseman died.
Exactly. It's such a delicate situation. Mm-hmm. And I think again, given the sort of circumstances, this was sort of best case scenario. Because I'm the same as you. I've only ever seen Paul Walker in Fast. And so... for that to be the sort of franchise he's synonymous with, for them to sort of give him the sort of a proper sort of send off, it felt right, and his relationship with Dom in that film is just I love it, it's great.
It's great. Do you want to move on to the scores then? For overall film, because we've not really touched on Vin Diesel. We could probably sum up Vin Diesel when we talk about the Vin Diesel rating. I suppose this film is a bit bigger than Vin Diesel, I guess. Do you want to, so overall, as an overall film, where are you sitting on this?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I really, really, I love it. I think it's one of those films that ages like a sort of fine wine. It's one that you can appreciate more with sort of time. It's also just a great action blockbuster. Like, it's so entertaining. I love the Burj Khalifa sequence. It's so over. It's like the right amount of over the top, because I think Fate of the Furious starts to push it a little bit too much.
We didn't even touch on Hobbs.
7's the right. dude. Okay, you're right. Yeah, see that? Daddy's got to go to work, dude. Breaks that cast.
Oh. It was the foreshadowing of that when he's watching the Hulk on TV, the old Incredible Hulk on the TV, and he's like, oh my god. I love how they sit him out for most of the movie, though. Like, he just sits out and does, like, why is that?
No, actually, I was going to say, I don't know why it is. It seems like he was filming Hercules at the time.
Ah.
So that's possibly why. But I was going to say, do you think his absence, like, affects the film? Like, looking at sort of Fast 5 and Fast 6.
I think we lose some kind of quips. And I think Kurt Russell takes on his role, I guess. I think Kurt Russell would have been the one to go, hey... I think Dwayne Johnson would have been the one to go, hey, there's some... fella's trying to get the god. I can't remember what it was called. There's some fella's trying to do that, but do you know, I want to give it a 4. I kind of want to give it a 3 begrudgingly on the just how much it does get bogged down in the spy stuff. But I can't do it. I can't give it a 3. I have to give it a 4.
This is what I'm saying. I would give it as a film, I think it's a 3-star film. But as an experience, I think for everything that it stands for and everything that it achieves, that's why I give it a 4. But I'm with you there. I get that.
So let's talk about Dom.
I love him in this, dude.
He is so good in this. This is probably
one. The streak always wins. He should. There's like several sequences in this movie where he should have died. He is a superhero.
Oh yeah,
Dominic Toretto. This is when Universal, you know, everyone's like, oh, Universal don't have a superhero franchise. No, they do. It's Fast and Furious, and exactly. Dominic Toretto is their superhero.
And he is again very loving. He's lost his whole bad guy. He's not a bad guy anymore. There's no criminal in him anymore. He's completely changed who he was, I guess, from the thing. So yeah, he's no longer the Strays or the Fast and the Furious. He is Fast and Furious Vin Diesel now. He is.
What do you
loves his fam?
Rate his the Vin Dieselness of this then. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you there. Yeah. I'm with you there. Like the street fights to the great moments of like family, and this is quintessential Dominic Toretto. Although, quick sort of side note, I did actually want to ask you about this. The fight between Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham. What do you think of it? Because I think it's very unbelievable that Jason Statham could, like, size-wise.
I don't know if he's had some kind of super soldier serum. I don't know what's going on with that guy. Like, it is just, it's crazy that he could even remotely...
Like, that always annoyed me about it.
Oh, I don't know. It's not believable whatsoever. But is any of this film believable? They jump out Dubai towers back-to-back. Like, of course it's not believable.
They parachute play it. Cars on the like car skydive the car skydive.
That's one of the best sequences in the movie as well. Like,
it's so good.
Oh, it's so good. It's such a great film, and that sits at 18 out of 20. So that is again.
Wow.
wow. We can talk about this when we talk about the rankings, but we're gonna have to decide a new number one. Which is, or at least maybe not. Maybe it won't be too much of a hassle. I don't think it will be too much of a hassle actually. But it's at least shaking things up at the top, which is very interesting. So moving on to our second film of the day, which is The Last Witch Hunter, directed by Breck Eisner. 2015 this came out. Breck Eisner is known for stuff like The Expanse recently. He does the TV show The Expanse, which I've not seen. It's just, what was the first thing that came up in his IMDb? This film... What happens in it? Because it's a great fun time.
Basically, it's like it starts in sort of the ancient world where sort of witches are bad, and there's a sort of battle brewing between like witch kind and witch hunters. And Vin Diesel basically plays this witch hunter called Calder. He kills the witch queen, but as he sort of kills her, he's sort of cursed with immortality. Which means he can't die. And so you know, we sort of skip ahead to the sort of modern world, the modern day, and he's basically going around sort of, not really killing, but sort of imprisoning anyone that's sort of using their witch powers for wrong and for harm. And things start to go a bit sort of awry when he realizes that the witch queen might potentially be coming back, and there's a sort of cult of witches basically after him.
It is there's some great vibes in this movie. I think we should first talk about I just want to quickly mention Vin Diesel's Viking. Just the hair beard. And the beard,
the ponytail,
that's just a beautiful. I think we got very excited over Find Me Guilty Vin Diesel when he had a full head of hair. But this Vin Diesel is probably one of the coolest looking Vin Diesels I think there is. I think this is the coolest era of Vin Diesel, I think. But yeah, like I said, the vibes in this film are immaculate. You said Sorcerer's Apprentice. I was getting stuff like Hellboy in a way. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
There was just stuff like Hellboy, Men in Black, but with like witch characters, and then Sorcerer's Apprentice is obviously a great one to bring up as well. It's such a cool film with such great potential.
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting, that kind of like world they have, but it's not explored fully. I would obviously say it's not sort of, they don't make as much use of it as I think they could have, but that's not to say it's not a great fun time. What are you thinking for this?
I agree. I think this is, I want to say, one of his lowest rated films, for some reason. But what I really like about it is that it's so self-aware. Like, it is completely ridiculous, but it is so sort of self-aware of that. And I think it leans into that. And so if you can sort of accept that, you can have a lot of fun with it. I just love these sort of contemporary fantasies, like these sort of old school mythology set in like the modern world. I love that. And yeah, I mean, it brought to mind The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is very nostalgic for me. And so it's so much fun. I feel like I agree with you in the sense that it doesn't do enough with its world or its characters. In that sense, it is a bit of a mess. And I think it's predictable as well. we were chatting about this last night.
The twist in this movie is one of the most obvious twists. They almost tell you. So the mysteries sort of surrounding the Dolan, Michael Caine. I knew
also,
there was a,
yeah.
Last week I said there is a British actor in this, and I thought it was Judi Dench or Helen Mirren, but it's not. It was Michael Caine that was in this movie that I was thinking of. He's retiring and then mysteriously dies, and just as this other Dolan's taking over, like, has just getting initiated to help Vin Diesel.
Elijah Wood, by the way.
Yeah, Elijah Wood of all people, which is crazy. I wonder who did it. I wonder who did it.
But you know what? Because I was thinking that. I was like, they make it so obvious. But then also the Dolans are like the sort of peacekeeping group of priests that sort of work with Calder. As they're sort of, you know, they set it up and it's very obvious. And then Vin Diesel is like, oh, it was you. And then they have that moment of like, oh, they're sort of saying what the audience is thinking, which is quite clever. Like, and then they sort of dismiss it. And I was like, okay. But then, spoiler, sorry, it ends up being Elijah Wood's character is responsible
for it. He's got evil eyes. That's why you can tell. He's got evil looking eyes. You know?
He's just so sus. I know.
Don't trust him. We talked about the world, the fantasy stuff. I do like its aesthetic with the whole modern fantasy stuff. Why is there not a much more of that? It's like, again, with Riddick, with the space fantasy, why is there not modern? There's not enough modern fantasy these days.
There's high budget,
lore heavy modern fantasy.
Yeah. Because like, this is pretty big budget, isn't it?
It's really big.
See the
budget.
Money on the screen. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's so cool. And I think Calder is a really interesting, it's like a really cool character. And that's one of the things that this sort of all comes full circle in a way, because this was has been on the cards for a very long time. It was on the blacklist, like you said, before we started filming, which is a big massive list of all these undeveloped scripts that are waiting to be developed or wanting to be bought.
Yeah,
but
like
it's
really
also been on
sort of scripts.
Yeah, it's
that
also been on the cards.
2010.
But before that, Vin had been thinking about this because his character is heavily tied into his Dungeons and Dragons character, which loops back into the Chronicles of Riddick, in which Vin Diesel used to play Dungeons and Dragons between scenes with Judi Dench on set. And so he developed his character in this film. It's loosely based off his character, which I've forgotten the name of now, but they've got very similar names on this, because he's a witch hunter and he also likes to use spells. So he fought, because he made a new class and stuff. He made a third party class and things. It's very, I've always wanted to play Dungeons. Have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons?
I've not. But the fact that Vin Diesel plays it makes me think I might want to try it out. Because I messaged you that, in fact. Like, I think I was like 5 minutes into the film and I was like, this is very D&D vibes. And then that's when you told me it was based on his character. Yeah. And I was like, that makes complete sense.
I've always wanted to try it. I've always wanted to try D&D. It's one of those things where I just think it would be so much fun.
Like, we can play it with just, Vin when we get him on the pod.
Yeah. I want to be part of Vin's D&D sessions. I think that'd be such a cool group, because I think Joe Manganiello plays D&D as well.
Yeah,
loads of celebrities play it.
Henry Cavill really plays it.
Yeah, of course Henry Cavill. He's a massive fucking nerd. He's a massive nerd.
It's like elite.
Yeah. So yeah, what else is this? Well, it's a good old time. There was something else I wanted to say. Oh yeah, there was gonna be a sequel. That never happened.
Yeah.
Because this film bombed
out. Which is a shame. It was a shame because I think it was announced before this came out. Yeah. And then the film obviously tanked, not only critically, but commercially as well. And so I think, I mean, so far it says it's in doubt. I feel like it's probably not in doubt. I feel like it's probably safe to say
years.
That.
It's been 6 years. I think we can call it.
Which is a shame because there's so much potential to this world and it does have a sequel bait ending.
Yeah, it does. Oh, it's such a shame. So let's. I don't know. Does anything else you want to add? I feel like we've just ran through this film, but we did have.
Not really.
We did have a really good time. Scores on the Doors. What are you thinking for overall film?
I'm gonna give it 3 out of 5. Like, I'm pleasantly surprised. Like,
yep.
I was fully going into this expecting it to be the worst Vin film, but it's just a, you know, if you sort of go into it, I think, just expecting to have a good time and not expecting anything sort of crazy or serious, there's a lot of fun to be had with it. There's some really cool action, really interesting world, and I think Calder's a very sort of fascinating character to sort of anchor it all.
And
I think for that reason it's just, I mean I had fun with it, so 3 out of 5.
What I agree. I agree. 3 out of 5. It is a really, really solid film. I'd love to see this world explored a bit more. I do think it wastes some potential in terms of just having a very clunky script. I don't know what was up with that. Even being on the blacklist, which really surprised me. I don't know if Summit had sort of, like, Lionsgate did some, like, was meddling in the behind the scenes, which, to be honest, they probably did. Or
probably will,
Too many cooks spoiled the broth sort of situation where it just sort of fell from where it was. But sorry.
The other thing is, it's very short as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot to cram into, like, and it's like, I think without credits, it was like 98 minutes, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to sort of pack a whole world.
I agree.
That spans centuries into sort of that amount of time. So I have to assume the script was probably longer and more fleshed out. I don't know.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
I would think so.
Here. Yeah.
I never looked at any deleted scenes. There might be like an hour worth of deleted scenes on there, so who knows?
Probably.
Vin Diesel, though. So what are you thinking of Calder as a Vin Diesel character? Where does he rank in this sort of area?
I liked him. I liked him a lot. I thought he was a really cool sort of character. He's a straight-up protagonist. Like, he's a hero, which is very sort of different. You know, Vin usually plays a sort of anti-hero. We've seen him grow into the hero, but he usually starts out as a sort of rebellious, you know, bad boy. If you think of, like, XXX, even Riddick, Dominic Toretto, whatever his character was called in Babylon AD. so it was like, nice to see him play a hero. I would go 3 out of 5. I think, you know, he's tough, he's cool. I think it's a solid sort of character in the sort of Vin Diesel canon. What about you?
I will go 2 there, but I've copied you all this episode anyway. I'll copy you again. It's free. I'll go 3.
Give me the reasons, though.
I like I said, he's a really cool character, and he's really cool, and I enjoyed his character. I thought it was very, very, it was very funny. It was good with ladies, obviously, because he's obviously very good with ladies. Vin Diesel is, he's very, he's the, And he's very action packed, swinging those big fiery swords about. He's having a good time, and I thought.
Do you not think some of the vibes between him and Rose Leslie were a bit weird?
Yes.
I don't know how old she is, but on screen it looks like the age difference is pretty drastic.
800 years, to be precise. I'm pretty sure it's what, 800 years.
But yeah. She's Scottish.
Is she?
Yeah, she's from Aberdeen. So I think there's like a 20-year age gap between them, from the looks of IMDb, and I don't know. It's just weird underlying like sexual tension, and it's just a bit awkward.
Let's jump into the rankings now. So at number one, or number two. So we have to decide. Fast 5 at number 1 or Furious 7 at number 1? Because they've both got 18 out of 20.
What do you think?
Fast 5.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Because, I mean, we talked about how we would both give Furious 7 a 3 as a film. I think the one... I mean, I could watch Fast 5 easily every day. I would rather watch it than Furious 7.
Yeah.
And I think it's the better... Dominic, even though we both, you know, we gave it sort of both 5, I think it's the better Dominic. I think my favorite Dominic Toretto is Fast 5 Dominic Toretto.
Yeah, I agree. So that's Fast 5 is still at number 1, 18 out of 20. 2, Furious 7. Number 3 is Strays. 4, Saving Private Ryan. Number 5, The Fast and the Furious. Number 6, number 6, XXX. Number 7, Furious 6. Number 8, Chronicles of Riddick. Number 9, Boiler Room. And at number 10 is either Guardians of the Galaxy or Witch Hunter. What are you thinking?
Guardians.
Yes, of course.
Guardians, come on.
So Guardians at number 10 and Witch Hunter is at number 11.
Which is more than I expected for Witch Hunter.
Yes, I did. I expected it to be really far down the pack. So props to it for being up here. Number 12 is Fast and Furious 4. Number 13 is Pacifier. Number 14 is Iron Giant. Number 15 is Riddick. Number 16 is Babylon. Number 17, Pitch Black. 18, Knock Around Guides. Number 19, which has finally been added to the list after months out of the list, which we were going, I must have missed one. Find Me Guilty was not on the list, and it is now number 19, which is second from the bottom, which it's still at the bottom, a man apart.
Good.
So yeah, that's that.
The pacifier is too low down. It makes me sad.
Some quick news before we jump away. Universal finally saw the light. We are getting Fast 9, the Fast Saga, or Fast and Furious 9, the Fast Saga. I believe is what it's called here.
Is it actually?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
Oh my god, no.
It might be called F9 the Fast Saga or something.
Oh wait, no, we can get the official title.
Yeah, we have the press release here, actually.
Fast and Furious 9, the Fast Saga. Oh my god. Fast and Furious 9, the Fast Saga. We know it's a Fast and Furious film, guys.
That's coming out June 24th now, which was previously slated for July 9th, which means we will get to see this in IMAX. For sure, 100%, very happy, and so it's just happy days all around. Also, big up happy birthday to my boy. I hope you have a swell day, Oasis. It's very
thank you.
It's weeks away now.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was like last month at the point of this coming out.
What are you doing to celebrate?
I'm going to see Spiral in cinemas. Oh. I've been making the most of Cineworld reopening, so it's been nice. Huh? Getting out and seeing movies in a cinema. Wow.
Must be nice. So that's everything for us. I've been Cameron. You can find me on Twitter at CanzoOG, Ohio Films on YouTube and ohiofilms.com. I do another podcast called The Four Eyes and the Giant with Jordy Steele. We talk about nerdy topics every week. I don't know what we're talking about this week because it's like a couple of weeks away actually now. We figure out what we're recording
on the
like
day,
5 minutes before like, we start. Say, it's, yeah, like, it's like we know the films we're going to talk about at the end, but we don't know what the topic of the actual conversation is going to be until later, like till like literally 5 minutes before we go. It's chaotic. Yeah, so that's where I'm at. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at OasisOase and on thefilmbite.com. Again, my Fast and Furious reviews are hopefully still coming out. As of right now, I'm a bit behind, so we'll see.
Oh. Gotta get on that.
So, I don't want to watch Tokyo Drift.
Fair enough, to be honest. Next week we have Billy Lynn's long halftime walk and Triple X: The Return of Xander Cage. So it's going to be a very unique episode, a very whiplashy episode. I don't know if you've seen Billy Lynn before, but
I'm looking forward to it.
It's a drama. I think it's one of his last dramatic roles. So we'll see how this all plans out. Please make sure to subscribe, like, follow, review. All that nonsense.
Share all of it.
Yep. Share it with your pals. We'll be back next week. So we'll see you then. See you later.